Hello, and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Osman, here with my friend and chavruta, Ann Gordon. Our daf today, Masechet Eruvin, daf Samach Aleph, 61. Our daf today, I think, contains some important discussion over some of the tension that we see with the establishment of an Eruv Tehumim, right, of extending the Shabbat boundary by another 2,000 amot. I'm not going to read this totally inside, but I think when you do review the daf, just to keep in mind two of these discussions. One is at the top of Amud Aleph, right, which goes through a whole interplay between the difference between a person who actually measures out their 2,000 amot of what the tehum could be versus somebody who just places their Erev in a city. And even though their actual tehum would only go, let's say, into the middle of the city, by virtue of just sort of placing the Erev there, they actually get access into the whole city. And I thought that that discussion was a little bit interesting, because certainly in a way, right, like if you're measuring, you almost are, it's almost to your deficit, right? To be exact in a way does not actually help you. And that almost you just want to just place your, Erev wherever you want to place it, and then it gives you access to a whole city. At the bottom of the Amud, there's sort of a parallel discussion that takes place, whether or not, well, it's really like sort of the end of the parak, which has to do with places that are inhabited or not inhabited, whether it be a city that was destroyed or had formerly been inhabited, whether it has to do with a cave, right, that may have people living there or not have people living there. And again, the Gemara sort of makes a distinction between if you make the place your actual residence, you gain more amot than if you just sort of place your Erev somewhere, right, into one of these uninhabited places, right, you don't gain as much. So I think that's just something to sort of pay attention to, that with some of these, tensions of like, what does it mean to just sort of symbolically place your Erev somewhere versus actually establishing that place as your actual residence? And what does it mean to measure versus just placing it somewhere? And then you get access to a much wider area. I thought that was just an interesting, some of those areas or things that were brought up were interesting to me.
I do find this interesting. I'm going to actually kind of try to probe the example here on our daf that I would say is the opposite of symbolic, but it highlights for us the question of when something is symbolic and when is it the opposite. Okay, so I am, I don't know, two-thirds of the way, something like that, down Amud Aleph. It says, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rami Bar Abba, Amar Rav Huna. Ir she yoshevet al sfat hanachal. So you have a city that sits, that its location is on the edge of the river, on the banks of the river, but the presumption is here that there's a steep drop, right? It's not that it kind of eases into the riverbank. Im yesh lefanea daka arba'a, modedim la misfat hanachal. So what happens if you have, well, I guess the question is, do you have a steep drop? And if so, right, if you have a barrier that is four amot up from, that kind of functions as not a barricade, some kind of block before that drop, then that's where you measure your Tum Shabbat from. And otherwise, you measure from your house. Right, because the city itself would not otherwise, have a starting point, I guess. So Amale Abaye. So Abaye now says to Rav Yosef, who has said in the name of all these other people, he says, Daka arba amot amartlan ala. You told us, Abaye says to Rav Yosef, you told us that with this kind of case that you need that barrier of arba amot. What do you mean that you don't need it here? Or what do you mean that you might not need it here, or that you could have a case of Tchum Shabbat without it? Amart lanala, maishna mikol dekei de alma de arba. What? How come in this case you need a higher barrier than all the other barriers? Right. In general, we're talking about four tfachim, not four amot. So why do you need it here to be four amot? Amar le, and this is where we get to the opposite of symbolic. Amar le, hatav lo ba'ita tashmista, hacha ba'ita tashmista. There. Right, using the place, right? In general, the location of your Erev itself is not a frightening kind of place. But here, to use that place could in fact be frightening, meaning you're talking about the drop to the water. And so now, so the English I've seen translate this to mean to be ravine, right? Meaning that's not a shallow drop, right? And Arba Amot is not a shallow drop, depending, I guess, on how skilled you are at jumping or something. I don't know. But so the idea here is that there's a real demarcation, and that the whole point of that demarcation is to be, or in this case, I say it's the opposite of symbolic, because how the people relate to this space matters, right? The fact that it might in fact be frightening is why you need the barrier to make clear that the Arba Amot is not too stiff of a drop, or let me say this better. The fact that you have a stiff drop here doesn't matter, because you have a barrier that will establish your Eruv at that point. And otherwise, you could say, well, I just need a little symbolic fence. And the answer is yes, but not when you have people who might be too nervous to come close to that little symbolic fence. You need something that's higher that's going to give them the sense of protection from the drop.
Yeah, this discussion was interesting, because up until now, we've sort of just been using the assumption of any mechitza that has to do with with whether it's with making a sheet of mavoi or an erev, or with even making the tichum, is just sort of there to, exactly like you said, it's like a symbolic partition. But here they're really saying, like, no, you're actually obligated to have a real partition. And again, I think this goes to that, like, a lot of what this masachet is dealing with is how do people relate to space. So you can't have a symbolic partition if, like, people really won't go up to the edge because there's, like, an actual danger or fear. Then you have to have an actual partition. It makes total sense, but it's a real inverse of how we've been discussing partitions up until now.
Right, exactly. And the fact that the symbolic partition counts as a real partition if the symbolism does the job, right? But if it doesn't work, if it doesn't separate off the space, right, then you need something that really does.
Right, exactly. So I'm just going to continue on with the rest of the Gemara there afterwards, which just, I'm reading it more just because I think it was a very interesting story that was shared. Amar Rav Yosef, mana amina la, right? So where do I learn this halacha? Detanya, hatir Rabbi, shiyu b'nei geder yordin l'chamtan, v'ein b'nei chamtan olin l'geder. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi allowed the residents of this town called Geder, right, which apparently was on top of a mountain or on top of a slope, to go to the bottom of the slope where the city Chamtan was. But the inverse was not true. The residents of Chamtan could not go up to the city of Geder. My time, what's the reason? Lab mishum dahani avud daka, bahani lo avud daka, right? So the first answer that they want to give, relating back to our previous discussion about barriers, is that the residents of Geder made a barrier at the end, the lower edge of their city, right, which was on some slopes. So presumably, if you didn't have that barrier there, it would have been scary to go past the edge of the city. But the residents of Chamtan, they didn't make a barrier for the upper edge of their city. And so therefore, the residents of Chamtan had to actually measure their tichum from their homes, and they couldn't use sort of the boundary of the city, whereas the residents of Geder, they could measure it from the boundary of the city because they had this partition, and that would take anybody into that their 2,000 amot, their tichum, would get you into the city of Chamtan. Ki ata Rav Dimi. So then Rav Dimi comes from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, because remember, that was an Amoraic discussion. And Rabbi Yehuda Nasi lived in, this took place in Eretz Yisrael in previous generations. So Rav Dimi comes from Eretz Yisrael, and he says, Amar, Tatruge mitatruge lehu b'nei geder libnei chamtam umay hitir hitkin. Right? So he says, no, it has nothing to do with this issue of tachum or not tachum. What it had to do with is that the residents of Geder would assault the residents of Chamtan. And so what is it? So why did Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi permit this? Right? Umay hitir hitkin. He instituted this. In other words, this is, you can't derive any halacha from this example, right? This is not a halachic example. This was a social inaction, right? That we know what's a takana. Takana is when you know, there's something, a difficult situation. And so the rabbis institute something in order to correct that difficult situation. So what was the difficult situation? Or you had two towns where I guess one town was violent against the other town. And so Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi sort of made this, you know, made this takana. Okay. And so what do they say? Umayshna Shabbat to Shichacha Bashichur, right? So the Gemara then asks, well, then what's the difference with Shabbat, right? And not the rest of the week. And so this is just, I think, from a sociological point of view, fascinating. The Gemara says drunkenness is common on Shabbat, right? People eat more. I guess they partake more in wine. And so, you know, people had a tendency to get more drunk. And I guess, therefore, that led to sort of more rowdy behavior. Now, I think to see this in the Gemara, like, would we ever think of Shabbat being practiced this way? No. So to me, this was like, this was very, very, you know, this was very shocking. Then the Gemara goes on and says, "Ki azli lahatam nami mitatrige luhu kalva belomete shav shaninan lo nava." So then the Gemara says, "Okay, but still, so when the residents of Gedar would go to Chamtan, wouldn't they still assault them? Like, in other words, what do you do if the residents of Gedar are the ones who are enacting this violence? How did you solve this?" And so then the Gemara gives a saying, right? A dog that's not in its place will not bark for 7 years. So in other words, the idea is if the residents of Chatam go into Gedar, the residents of Gedar, it's their turf. They're going to stick up for it, right? Like they're the sharks, you know, defending against the Jets, okay? But if, but if it was the other way around, you go into somebody else's territory, you may bark, but you're not going to have any bite. Hashta nami mitatrigei b'nei Chatam li'b'nei Gedar. So then the Gemara asks the inverse. Okay, but shouldn't we be concerned that when the residents of Chamtan are in their home territory, if it's your home, maybe they will actually assault the residents of Gedar? So the Gemara answers, right, that the people of Gedar would not be submissive so much. That in other words, what? When they're visiting Chamtan, they wouldn't necessarily initiate the fighting, but they certainly would fight back. So the people of Chamtan knew not to start up with them. So it clearly seems to be that the people of Gedar, were much more, I guess, violent, right? Like that's really what it is. But now we're Safra.
Or territorial.
Right, they were much right? More, right. I guess that's what it is.
They went out to look for a fight.
So now we're going to have, right. So the first option we had was this was actually a halachic ruling of Rebbe. The second option was this actually was just a takana because these groups of the people of Gedar didn't know how to behave. Now we're going to have a third option of what this was. And Rav Safra Omer, that really what this was about is that Gedar was shaped like a bow, right? So we've talked about that type of city before where you have the two ends of the city are separated by less than 4,000 amot. And there was sort of this empty space, but we still view that empty space as being filled with houses. And therefore the tichum actually is like a bow, you know, the bowstring that stretched between the two ends. So your tichum actually starts against this area that wasn't actually filled. And the way that it worked is Chamtan was actually included in this empty space. But for the people of Chamtan, right, they didn't, you know, fall into actually the Tichum of Gedar. So I think what's fascinating about Rav Safra's opinion is that depending on what city you're in, your Tichum can be completely different, even though geographically everything, you know, encompasses the same sort of space. Rav Dimi Bar Hanina Amar Anche Yer Gedola V'Anche Yer Ketana Habe. So Rav Dimi has a fourth opinion of what this was, that the people of Gedar were residents of a large city, right? Whereas the people of Chamtan were residents of a small city. And as we learned previously, right, the residents of a large city, they generally can walk through the entire contents of the whole area of a small city, but the inverse is not true, as was explained previously, you know, on the daf. Rav Gahana Matni Hachi. So Rav Kahana taught it this way, right? Hachi Rav Tivume Matni, right? And he taught this, whereas Rav Tavumi taught it this way, right? Hachi Rav Safra, Rav Dimi Bar Hanuni, right? And also Rav Safra and Rav Dimi Bar Hanuni, they disagreed about this. So they're just going to repeat their machlokas here. Amar, ir ha'usiyah kekeshad habay, v'chad amar anche ir ketan of anche ir gedolah here. Right? So just restating what this machlokas was. Rav Safra said the reason for this halacha was that Gedar was shaped like a bow, one of them said that Gedar was shaped like a bow, and one of them said the residents were, you know, the Gedar was a big city where Chamtan was a small city. So just a very interesting discussion about, this tension, first of all, that we see between, like, the theoretical of all these issues of Erev Tachumim and then sort of them bringing like an actual example of a two towns that they know of. But also this whole, the middle opinion there that basically like you had this town of sort of like violent, drunken Jews just really stood out to me on this stuff.
Oh, I think it's remarkable. I mean, I know you've already made this point, but I think this idea that Shabbat was a time of drunkenness, you know, in that vocabulary, in that same phrasing is startling. Even amongst the Jews that I know who are, have the biggest traditions, let's say, of a little bit of extra drinking, let's say amongst certain Hasidim or whatever, I still don't think that we would characterize Shabbos in that way, right? Even if they're more likely to make, you know, this, I watched this as a child and was startled when someone I know made Kiddush on a kos, a full cup of vodka instead of on, you know, grape juice or wine, as my family did, right? So I'm not saying that nobody has a drinking tradition behind them, but not in this way. And the only thing I can think of is that, you know, I don't even think it works for the time of the Gemara, but certainly in the Middle Ages, you know, water was less of a commodity and drinking was more so. So if they can sit around and have a nice meal, then they might actually get more inebriated just because they have the leisure to do so a little bit more. But I don't know if that was really true in the time of the Gemara that they, didn't they have water then? I think they did.
I don't know. But I, to me, what's more interesting here is just that the Gemara was willing to record this and say something a little bit not so nice, you know, like that, that's, in, you know, they could have sort of self, they could have censored this, you know?
Censored.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Although the Gemara doesn't, I mean, right? Isn't that a selling point of Judaism that we always look at our Gedolim, at our great ones, you know, as human with all their frailties, and that holds for the Gemara as well?
Yeah, no, that's true.
And if we need a proof of that, here we go. You know, it's right here. They don't hide the fact that this was worthy of critique.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's and I give them credit for that. Well, that's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF and some of the drunken behavior that was described on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.